Blog Talk Radio.
Gigolo. He is an internationally known elite male escort for women.
His years of experience, both professionally and otherwise, in the art of seduction have given him a deep understanding of the applied principles of human sociosexuality. He first came to public prominence as the star of The Gigolos, an American docudrama series following the lives of high-end male escorts in Las Vegas. He studied philosophy at Howard University and currently splits his time between Los Angeles and Las Vegas. Please welcome him to the show. Hi, Van. Are
Hello.
You there?
Hi. I'm here.
Welcome
Hi.
To Fire Talk.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Can you start off telling us about yourself and your website or any information like that?
Probably many of the people listening right now know me from being on Gigolos on Showtime, which is a reality show about the agency that I work for as a male escort, and that agency is Cowboy Angels. And so, any and all information about me is available at VinArmani.com, and then CowboysForAngels.com is where you can see more about the agency and myself and the other guys who work for it.
All right, so we're going to start by you telling us what you ascribe the word gigolo to mean so that people can get an understanding of what that encompasses.
Well, I think, in terms of the name of the show, Gigolos, I think they're, referring to sort of just the guys who are in the profession of being male escorts. But myself, as I've used it in my book, Dao the Gigolo, I really kind of view it in a larger context, in a larger historical context. And just really, for me, I define it as someone who is a man who is a practitioner of the art of love, and specifically the art of seduction. So, I mean, this goes, all the way back to, like, Casanova and these types of guys. It carries all the way through, into sort of the golden age of Hollywood and all of that, and those sorts of men and ideals of men. And I think for the new age, I would hope that I could represent that as well and sort of be remembered as one of those guys.
So how did you come to be on this show?
Well, the show, as I said, is about our agency, Cowboys for Angels, and Las Vegas, where the show is shot and where it's set, is sort of the, for our industry, is the top location in the world, I guess you could say, for obvious reasons. And so in terms of the show, I was working in Los Angeles for a while after I met my agent, Garen James, of Cowboys for Angels, and he had been approached by Showtime and asked if they could sort of follow some of his guys in Las Vegas around and find out what goes on in our lives. It's a world that a lot of people have obviously no access to. So I was working in L.A. at the time. He thought I would be a good match both for the clientele in Las Vegas, but also that I would be kind of a good addition to the group of guys he already had there. And it just so happened that he asked me to go out there and be a part of that group of guys at the same time that they were filming, and sort of the rest is history.
Yeah, one thing that my husband and I enjoy about the show as much is watching the guys interact. Are y'all really as close in real life and spend time together?
We definitely do spend a lot of time together. It's one of those things where with what we do and the worldview and sort of the glimpse into a different reality or a broader reality that it affords us, sometimes it's hard to just sit and talk with, civilians, as we call them,
right.
And especially about what it is that we do. So, it's because we have a sort of a solitary profession where when we go to work, we're by ourselves for the most part, and those other guys aren't there, that,
right.
Just to kind of talk shop, share stories, just interact and sort of have a level of sort of camaraderie and I mean, I want to use the term fellowship almost, but
yeah.
it kind of is that, to where we have such this unique outlook on the world, and we all have other friends as well, you know. But it is great that we're afforded the opportunity to have so many of us, really. In the other cities, the guys don't normally have as good of an interaction or as much of an interaction as often. So, yeah, we're really blessed in that way that we're able to hang out with each other.
So if someone was wanting to become a gigolo, what advice would you give them?
Oh, that's a big one, I think. You know, I often, I always compare sort of what I do or the way that I approach and look at what I do as, you know, something like what it takes to do it is something across between a chef, a professional chef, not just a cook, but like a chef, and a professional athlete. That it's somewhere in between the two of those. And so asking someone wants to become a gigolo, it's almost like saying, hey, I want to play for basketball for the Lakers. How do I do that? You know?
Right.
Or I want to play in the NFL. How do I do that? And it's, you know, the first thing is to say, well, this, it's a journey. It's a multi-year, if not multi-decade journey that you're going to have to take. And, you know, you're going to have to start at a very – you're not going to be playing – that's the end, right? So for me, and the way that I was introduced even into the industry, I was already doing this just as a sort of to benefit my life. So I guess you could view it as, you know, I was a guy who loved – basketball, if you might want to say that, and was just playing for his pure enjoyment out
yeah.
on the courts, playground courts, and some recruiter for an NBA team walked up to me and said, oh, hey, I think, you know, you'd be a great basketball player, and then hired me to play for his team. So it wasn't like I was trying to be a professional. I just, the things that were involved
were so
in learning
the art
court
of seduction. That it just kind of worked itself out.
Exactly.
You know, that's such an interesting way. Now, some people, it seems like they think that it's one-dimensional, that as long as you're good with the sex aspect, that that's all it takes. What would you say to them?
Well, you know, it can be one-dimensional. It really can, and it's all about how the individual approaches it. So, I mean, in that way, that's how I describe it as a sort of a chef, right? So,
right.
You could be just a good cook, you know, and you could start a restaurant, and the food may taste good, and people are satisfied by the food, and you could have a relatively successful diner or something like that, you know. And a lot of people
right.
who are just line cooks who cook just your regular, you know, kind of run of the mill fare. Are able to open restaurants that stay open for 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, where I'm from, I mean, there are quite a few restaurants that have been family-owned and serving the same things for, you know, 50 years, some of them. But those people who really are into the art and science of food, and so who maybe are good cooks but then want to take it a step further, and they educate themselves in various different cuisines and how do you approach a meal and presentation and how do you appeal to the palate and all of these things, which can take years, decades, you know. And the type of people who travel the world looking for new tastes and new spices and new ways to prepare food, who are just enamored and in love with food, well, those are the people who become chefs of,
right.
you know, great esteem. Some of them become celebrity chefs. And, you know, where they're, it's you can't get a table at their restaurant and, you know, you're going to pay $500 for two people to eat a meal. So there are two different ways of approaching it. And it's the same with being an escort, whether it's male or female, because I also know and work with a lot of female escorts. And, you know, there are some, even in, you know, with, and I think most people approach the female side of it and say, oh, it's just about sex. But the thing is, there are women who approach it that way and they make decent money, most of them, because, you know, if you're good at what you do, even if it's just on the shallow end, you'll make pretty good money. But then there
right.
are others who really approach it as seduction and companionship and you know, have sought to learn new cultures and more languages and, you know, are well-traveled and really approach it as an art form, and they make, you know, thousands of dollars an hour. So there's a broad spectrum of people, and I hope to be and have always sought to be on the higher end of that spectrum.
Now, women's sexuality is probably the most complex thing to master, and you seem to be intrigued by that. So is
Yes.
that something within you that you've always been intrigued by that?
I'm somebody who likes problem solving. I always have.
Mm-hmm.
Before I was doing this, I mean, my primary career, first I started out in music and as a producer, and then got into business, you know, and I was self-taught in all of those things, and then got into software development. All of these things are sort of these big problem solving issues, and every man, one of the big problems of history that men have been trying to solve is, what is the key to getting a woman to like me? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Never mind getting a woman to sleep with me, but getting a woman to like me and then, you know, keeping that going, keeping the fire going, right? That's that mystery of love. And it always intrigued me. And when I was in my early 20s, I ran across kind of at that time a burgeoning group of guys in Los Angeles where I was living, who I think at that time pretty much called themselves pickup artists or the pickup community. I think now it's called a little more of the seduction community. And it's petered out a bit, but at that time it was really a bit of a secret society. And it was a lot of guys who were trying various different things and trying to get into the art and science of sort of what makes women tick. You know, what makes what is love for a woman? What is attraction for a woman? What is arousal for a woman? And you know, I became absolutely intrigued with it. And so then from that point on, it was just something that was a huge part of my life, was learning and figuring out and putting it into practice.
It seems like reading your book that you really sat and broke down the elements of it in a way that most people never would. Can you explain a little more of the components that go into the art of seduction?
Okay. Well, the art of seduction is really sort of one part of what I refer to as the art of love. And when I'm talking about love, and it's something I don't necessarily go into in the book, I like to leave it a little open-ended, but when I think of love, I'm really thinking of it on a more of a biological level. So there have been studies within the past, you know, 5 to 6 years that have been pretty groundbreaking. Helen Fisher is one of the, she actually is a, I believe she's a behavioral psychologist, but she worked with a neuroscientist, and they actually mapped the brains of people in love and found that the same centers, when they would show people who said they were in love, infatuated with someone, they'd show them that picture, they put them in an MRI and saw what part of the brain went off, and it was actually the same part of the brain that went off when someone took cocaine. So there's a chemical sort of reaction that is love. There's a biological reaction that is love. And so in that way, you know, there is a sequence of things that one can do as a practitioner of the art of love. Just like a practitioner of the art of cuisine or the art of food can put together flavors that then somebody tastes and they have, you know, an instant biological reaction. Well, there's a series of things that someone can do as, you know, behavioral in the sort of mating dance that
right.
then triggers that and sets off that love response and sets off that powerful lust response. And so that's the art. The art of love is sort of creating the recipe, as you will. And for each person, it's a little bit different. So that's even a deeper aspect of the art, is that, you know, you have sort of all, you create a toolbox, but then
right.
each person is going to require a little something different to get them sort of the perfect dish, if you will. And it just as everybody's palate, you know, some people like things a little spicier, some people like things a little saltier. So it's getting that, it's sort of having that main recipe and then sprinkling in the little bits that make somebody just really enjoy the experience. And, you know, I have had many clients completely unprompted tell me that, you know, the experience is like a drug, to literally say it's like a drug. And,
yeah.
it's not surprising that they would say that, because it's firing off the same, when it's done right, it's firing off the same places in the brain that a drug does. So it's a, love is a very scientific thing to me. And yet, for me, it makes it even more powerful. You know, it's not that it's not, it still is a huge mystery as to exactly why it's working, but it's so powerful to see that it is something universal that exists in all of us, that we all have the capacity for love. We all have the capacity for lust and great degrees of arousal, and that when that's satisfied, just how happy and fulfilled people feel, you know, especially people who haven't felt it in a long time.
Oh, yes, definitely. So then you've taken a lot of time to understand the mind and how it works, and physically the chemical reactions, all those different things that most people don't even factor in. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued by, I mean, I've read probably 36 books covering everything, and never mind articles and studies and you know, things that I may run across on Discovery Channel or whatever, but, you know, covering basically what I like is psychology and sociology, but then also like neuropsychology and neurobiology and evolutionary,
yeah,
sort of evolutionary biology, and a lot of human sexuality stuff that deals with, you know, where did these drives come from and why, looking at the things that are constant across all cultures. So all of those, sort of all of those aspects just intrigue me. Human behavior intrigues me. And, you know, we're an animal, and we study these other animals, but then we never look at ourselves in the same way that we look at these other species. You know, when we try to map out, oh, it's behaving like this, 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 and this, or we look at our dog and we realize, you know, we've trained this dog, or this dog behaves this way because of how we've treated it. But we never look at ourselves and say, you know what, we're trained as well. And
exactly,
we are conditioned by other human beings in the same way that we condition the animals that live with us, our cats and dogs and, you know, horses and whatever it is. So I've always found that part interesting. And for me to look at myself and see how I've been trained, and to know that I can decide to retrain myself to be whatever type of person I want to be, it's very empowering.
Yes, that everything that you just said is completely right. I love figuring out how the brain works, and I could tell in your book too that the Discovery Channel, you watch that a lot different than most people. But
mm-hmm.
Can you tell us some of the primal things that drive us that most people don't realize?
Well, I mean, the first thing to remember is that when you're dealing with, again, just like dealing with taste, just like
right,
dealing with, you know, sort of tactile feelings or the things that are visually appealing, it's about, or sound. Sound is probably even better than taste. It's very similar. You know, there is some sort of cultural underpinning of the things that are pleasing to the ear, the things that are,
yeah,
pleasing to the taste. So if you're raised in a certain culture and you had certain tastes over and over and over again, there are things that will and won't be appealing. But there are, you know, natural things, a perfect fifth chord, or, you know, the taste of a strawberry, for instance, or something like that, or just sugar on the tongue, are the sorts of things that biologically you can't get around. If your brain is functioning correctly, you're going to have a positive biological response. So the first thing to remember is that there's those same sorts of things within the human mating game. So
right,
I think for men, a lot of that is embodied in the concept of confidence. You know, it's that one thing that women will, as a behavioral trait, I mean, never mind, you know, health and height, all of those things tend to be across all cultures
right,
attractive in a man, right? Some amount of, you know, a physique, whatever, those are naturally attractive. But like the idea of confidence, which has been this sort of nebulous idea, but I put it forward that my belief is that what confidence is being unafraid to sort of speak your truth about what you want, and that you want this woman in front of you. And as opposed to sort of skirting around it, trying to I say that there's a continuum of confidence and creepy. That confidence is sort of the opposite of creepy, and creepy
yeah.
is the opposite of confidence.
Exactly.
Right? So, and what is creepy? Creepy is a guy who's kind of hanging around, and you're like, what does he want? I don't know. What's his intention? Right? So your brain kind of goes crazy as a woman, and you want to get away from this guy because you don't know his intention, as opposed to a man who's just speaking his intention. You know that he has no – he's going to leave you with the choice at the end of the day of how you want – what you want and how you want to behave. But that he's saying, listen, I find you attractive. I'd love to be with you. I'd love to know more about you. I'd love to spend time alone with you, you know, and whatever happens, I'm going to always give you the choice and the freedom to walk away at any minute. I'm not going to push anything on you. And I think that is – something that
right.
across all cultures is always represented as being, you know, very, very manly and very attractive to a woman.
Yes, because safety is always a component of whether they let down or they put the wall up. And
absolutely.
A man,
I mean,
understanding
that is
everything.
It's huge. And, I mean, that the concept of safety, you know, is a very, it's very malleable, and it is very
yes.
different. For, and I think that's why I say, It's not wholly different, but it's different enough that, you know, what makes one woman feel safe is not necessarily going to make another woman feel safe.
Very true.
And that's where you have to, as a man, adjust, and certainly it's a huge part of the art of seduction, is that seduction is really about, and this is something that kind of the pickup artist scene, the seduction scene, the whole goal is what they call, you know, building comfort or creating comfort. That it's,
okay.
getting to a situation where you go from this woman in front of you is a stranger and she's talking to a man who's a stranger, which naturally makes her feel unsafe, to she feels utterly safe in his presence. And it's
right.
how do you – because once that happens, if there's any physical attraction, as human beings, the sexual stuff is just going to happen. You know, all you need is – it's that sort of recipe of a degree of physical attraction – comfort, which is we interpret as chemistry. So in other words, you want to be around the other person, and then privacy. That's pretty much it. You
right.
add those three things in, and sex just happens between two human beings who are, you know, sexually compatible. So as opposed to, I think, the idea that most men have in sort of the mating game, that I want sex, I'm going to go out, hopefully I can get this woman to give me some sex. It's the
right.
idea that, no, forget about that. If you want sex, just create the recipe and then let nature take over. You don't have to try to go and get sex. All you have to do is try to make her feel comfortable.
Exactly.
And that's
where men don't understand that
exactly.
if they quit focusing on sex, that would
yes.
allow women to really want to have sex with them.
Well, it's kind of that interesting paradox that, and it's why I say that there's a sexual marketplace, because, you know, my business mentors have told me the same thing about money. They've said, you know, if you go, and I mean, these are millionaires and some of them billionaires, that it's like, if you go out in the world in pursuit of money, you'll never get it. If you go out in the world in pursuit of solving people's problems,
right.
you'll have more money than you could ever hope to have. So they say, don't go in search of money. Go in search of places where people are upset or where people are not able to live up to their fullest potential, and help them. Go out in the world to help people with whatever it is that you build. Build something to help people, and you will be wealthy beyond your wildest dreams. And it's been true.
Absolutely.
So it's the
now,
same thing with sex. You know, it's
yeah.
like, don't go out in search of sex. Go out
right.
in search of making women happy.
Our connection.
Which is how people become happy, is we're social creatures. So the stronger, deeper, and more fulfilling our connections are with other people, the happier we are.
One thing I think that women struggle with is when somebody sleeps with them, they almost feel used afterwards, like they were never really mm-hmm. seen for who they were during that time.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the seduction, making a woman feel visible, making them feel like they're everything to you in front of you. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think seduction is deeper because it doesn't just it's a way of behaving, and I think, you know, I say the art of love is the art of making genuine connections, but it's not just making genuine connections with so I don't just make those types of connections with women. Obviously, I make genuine connections with men, not sexual connections.
Right.
But I make genuine connections with everyone around me. But I'm a heterosexual man, and if I'm dealing with a heterosexual woman, and she's, you know, and I'm a very sexual guy, and I'm flirtatious, and I'm not going, if I feel a sexual attraction, I'm going to make it known. So in the moment, I think it goes back to really the idea of what is this man's intention? You know, if his intention is to extract sex from her, I think that after that the act is done, what she is going to feel naturally, because a woman is going to go off her intuition, and her intuition is going to be right in this case, was that he was never interested in me.
Exactly.
He was interested in me, and it's when women say, you know, objectification and all of these things. It's true, right? It's absolutely true. So if his goal going into it is to say, I want to make her happy, her being the individual that she is, well, then that means that his actions will be to find out about her, because he'll need to know a lot of information about her, you know? I think you could liken it again to the food situation. You know, if someone says, if you go to a restaurant and you order something and you say, okay, you know, I don't like mushrooms, can you take the mushrooms out? And they say, no, we don't make substitutions, or we don't change anything on the menu. You know, it sort of gives you this feeling as a consumer that, wow, you really don't care if it tastes good to me or not. All you care about is just taking my money. You're happy to take my money, but you don't care if I enjoy my food. You know, as opposed to going to a place where the chef comes out and says, was everything okay? You know, was it good? Could anything have been changed? Can I? And then you say, oh, they want to make me happy, and you're glad to give them your money. You know,
absolutely.
You feel like you got your money's worth. So in the same way, in seduction, how I always approach it, because I know that if I do my sort of job, and I'm saying this in professional and private as well, but if I go into it and I make a woman happy and aroused and comfortable, she's gonna want to have sex with me. Now, whether that happens or not is going to depend on the logistics of the situation, but my goal is to make her want to be ripping my clothes off, make her want to be getting me in private, because if I can do that, I'm going to be satisfied. I don't have to worry about that.
No,
so,
won't be a problem.
And then she's never going to feel like, because she made the decision, right? She wasn't forced into it.
Right.
And, you know, women are sexual creatures, just like women have needs and desires. And if there's a guy in front of them, you know, oftentimes they'll be like, well, this isn't the greatest experience, but I'm horny. And, you know, I guess I need to get some too. And maybe it's lackluster. And then afterwards they feel like that was a bad decision. You know, so I think it's a perspective. It's a perspective difference. And the art of seduction is getting a woman to the point where she wants to do all of the things that I decided I wanted to do the second that I saw her.
Wow. That's an excellent way to put it. Let's go into your book a little bit more.
Okay.
Why did you write it, and who did you write it for?
Well, I've been wanting to sort of put down my, at least a high-level view of my philosophy on relationships for a long time. And friends of mine, sort of within that seduction community, and of people that I knew who saw how I approached relationships, had asked me for a long time, well, why don't you write a book? You should write a book. But I always said, well, why would nobody's going to read my book? You know, who am I to do this? So it was kind of just a good opportunity that, you know, my face and name was out there. And so, you know, I took the opportunity to do that. It's mainly written for men. But I think as a woman, and, you know, I'm sure you reading it have seen that there's some good stuff in there for women as well.
Absolutely.
And Yeah, I mean, I say for women, I really feel sort of sorry and bad for women at how terrible men are at the whole sort of mating game. it's terrible when you have to wait, you know, because one gender is sort of is leading the interaction. The men are, for the most part, leading the interaction. It's just a biological situation. And with men being so terrible, most women have never been seduced. Most women have never been in a relationship with a truly genuine connection. And most people end up really settling. They, you know, they're happy with sort of, because, you know, you meet somebody, you get together, you're comfortable with them, and you fall in love over time, because here's this person, they're in my life, I don't want them to leave. We have a connection, but it isn't, let's say, he's not Prince Charming, let's just put it like that.
Right.
And, you know, we start to take each other for granted, and it's just because this is something men are not educated in. So I wanted to provide that for men, but I also wanted to write about sort of what that looks like so that a woman encountering a guy who is actually doing all of these things can sort of have some grasp of the language. Because I often find, you know, that I will go out into the world and, you know, meet a woman and start interacting with her, and she just has had so... the relationships that she's had in the past or the examples that she's had of men in the past have been so terrible that she can't even appreciate sort of what it is that I'm bringing to the table. And even though, you know, and I view it in much the same way that I love sushi, you know, to bring it back to food. I think it's a great metaphor. I love sushi. And I think now it's become a very popular cuisine, you know, but when I first started eating sushi as a kid and my parents took me, it was very kind of avant-garde. And the idea of, oh, you're eating raw fish, I would never, ever eat that,
right.
That was kind of the prevalent view. And it was just because people had never tried it. So, like, for me, I feel like I'm laying out, you know, a sashimi plate that's like, you know, $200 plate in front of this woman, but she's never eaten good sushi, so she just rejects it offhand because it's something so new to her. But, you know, somebody comes along and throws a McDonald's hamburger down in front of her, she's used to that, so she'll eat that. And so what I was hoping was to you know, give a glimpse into a broader palate and sort of a more satisfying recipe and a more satisfying meal, if you would, for both men and women. So men can use it, and women can have a broader view of kind of the type of man that they might want to be looking for, the type of relationship they might want to try to have.
Well, I think this player mentality has really damaged the connection between men and women, because it just makes us distrust each other that much more.
Well, it is, you know, it's interesting. I tend to think of myself as having a player mentality, but the difference is that I'm trying to give more value than I get, if that makes sense. I think that the problem with the player mentality is that people feel swindled.
Yeah.
So, which is also something that I saw in the pickup community or in the seduction community that always sort of, it distressed me, but I wanted to evolve past it because I knew that it didn't have to just be a con, you know. A lot of guys, they learned, it's almost like the dark side of the force, you know. They learn a few tricks that are powerful things that do set off the sort of biological instincts of a woman, and then they use that to sort of run a con so that they can have a little one-night stand, call it a conquest, and then kick her to the curb. And
right.
For me, that seemed like such a poor use of such powerful information. And so I think that I still have that player mentality because I just like any other man, I want to sleep with a lot of women that I'm attracted to. Why wouldn't I? I mean, that's a biological instinct, and it's very fulfilling. But I want to be able to do it over and over and over, and I want them to have a great experience about it.
Right.
And I want them to want to see me again, and I want to be desired as well. I don't want to be thought of as, you know, some jerk, but and I also don't just want to have one-night stands because, you know, it's, for me, my experience has been the first time with somebody is always the worst time. That usually it takes, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 times to get really comfortable with the other person, sort of know the things that turns them on, and then it can be explosive. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the quintessential, you know, best experience. And that means developing a real connection and developing a real relationship.
Which is where a lot of men lose out by that one-night
exactly.
stand because they don't know how to value what's actually in front of them. But to me, the measure of it is what the person feels like the next day is everything.
Well, you know, we are very much hamstringed by our concepts and our sort of adherence to monogamy in this culture, which
yeah.
is one of the reasons why I write about it, is that, you know, you could blame men, but that would be overlooking sort of the reasons, the very sane reasons why men have these one night stands and why the player mentality comes up. And basically what it is if you have the idea that I'm supposed to be monogamous, right? I'm not supposed to have relationships with multiple women at the same time. Then that means that if you want to sleep with multiple women, the only way, which every man does, it's biology, right? Every man wants a variety of sexual partners. That's how we're set up. It's the reason why porn, which basically gives you a virtual version of that, is a multi-billion-dollar industry and
absolutely.
Most of the traffic on the internet, right? It's because men have a natural, and we have to just get okay with that men have a natural biological desire for many partners. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to abuse the partners that you have emotionally and that you have to be a user, but when you have a situation where monogamy is the only thing that's valued in a culture, then that means that men are dissuaded from having sort of multiple long-term committed relationships. So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Do you see society's view of monogamy and relationships and even the what happens sexually changing and shifting?
I don't think that we are going to see a significant cultural shift in our ideals about monogamy anytime soon. As a matter of fact, it's probably gone from the late 60s and early 70s. It's probably gone more. It's been pushed more conservative in the last 40 years, which for me, I actually don't have a problem with. So long as we don't take away someone's right legally to live in a non-monogamous manner, then I think that I would actually prefer that the rest of the world is monogamous. I always say, you know, there's only value in other people believing what I believe if what I believe is wrong. And by that I mean it's very logical, you know. If I think that next door to my house there's $1 million in gold bullion buried in the backyard, the last thing I want is to tell everybody so that someone else can get it. You know, if I believe that tomorrow, you know, some stock that nobody knows about is going to shoot up 100 points, you know, on the New York Stock Exchange, I don't tell anybody. I just go and buy the stock. You know, I don't want anybody else to know that. So it's the way that a market operates. So for me, I'm like, please continue living in the fantasy world that is the relationships that aren't working, that aren't exciting, all of that, because that's the reason why I have a job. You know, all of my clients, 100% of them, their only experiences with relationships have been the traditional relationship. And then when they have experience with an evening with me, that will generally turn into a much longer set of evenings, you know, because it's so different and it's so much more exciting and it's so much more fulfilling that they don't want to go back. And, you know, I mean, I've had, this is not to toot my own horn, but it's just the truth. truth that even in my private life, I've had quite a few of my sort of exes, who I'm still very good friends with, say to me that they both love me and hate me, and one of the reasons they hate me is because they say, you spoiled me now.
I can't find
another relationship. No relationship that I have is fulfilling. And again, it's just like if you spent a year, you know, living with or in a relationship with a celebrity chef like Gordon Ramsay,
mm-hmm.
and so every day just the food that you ate was better than anything you could get at a restaurant, and then you have to go, and then he leaves, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, this sucks because the food that I'm eating now is terrible compared to what I used to eat. I want that back. You know, so
I can see where that would happen.
Right. So that's for me, that's the way that I look at it. I say, please, everybody else, keep living in that fantasy world where you haven't even thought about it, and you just listen to what you're told about how a relationship should be, because so long as you're living in that world, I still have a job, and I'm able to have relationships with any woman that I would choose, because I'm so much better than what anybody else is doing.
So how... in a market where women can get laid anytime they want, the value for you and as an escort is the difference in performance and the difference in how you treat them then.
Well, and I think that's that idea of women can get laid anytime they want. Well, that's true, but that also removes the value for a woman. It's sort of like if you live next to a river of flowing fresh water that is inexhaustible, and you can take a drink anytime you want. The value of a glass of water is pretty low,
right?
You know, but if you're living in the middle of a desert, or it takes you, you know, 50 pumps on a pump to get some fresh water out of the ground, the value of a glass of water is a lot more. So for women, it isn't about and biologically, it isn't about sort of the act of sexual intercourse, the getting laid, and I think what a lot of people don't understand is that, like, the obsession with, oh, I'm going to figure out this woman's body to get her off and all of this, and guys who are just obsessed with, like, all the little things that they're going to do tactily, makes
mm-hmm.
no difference. Makes
right.
no difference, because I can do what I'm going to do and get a woman aroused sort of with her clothes still on.
Absolutely.
to the point where it's going to take very little touching. I mean, and obviously I know what I'm doing in that department as well, but if I've done my job right, she's going to get off almost instantaneously because her body is, and her mind and her entire being is just so aroused. Like, she's completely ready to go. So, you know, it is because the mind is what's creating the orgasm. The mind is what's creating the pleasure. And the same act, I mean, let's to be a little bit crude, but to be real, it's like the same sort of in-out penetration of intercourse could be happening with a lover. It could be happening with somebody that she is not really that attracted to, but she's doing it for another reason. It could be happening in the middle of a rape, you know, but all of those are the same motion that's happening. It's, you know, the same insertion and the same in and out, but what it means, the context of what it means to her, and therefore how aroused she is by that particular situation, is completely different. So
right.
The arousal's in the mind. And what I'm going for is I'm going for the mind, and I'm going for stimulating those parts of the brain and those parts of her being that are
right.
going to create a situation where she feels, no matter what happens sexually, she feels that it was the best sex she ever had, because sex is a much bigger concept. It's not just the in-out. It's what happens from the moment that you meet until the last moment that you ever say a word to each other. That's sex between a man and a woman.
Exactly. It's in the smallest nuances of touch, and
exactly.
the laughter and the look, everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, I see that you also sometimes entertain couples as a voyeuristic thing, I assume. Is that correct?
Well, so couples, it's always, they always have a little bit of a different thing that they want to do. I'm a heterosexual guy, so anything that might happen in a sexual vein is not going to happen if it's with a couple between myself and the guy there. But
right.
there's a lot of different things that couples want. But what I've found sort of as a conceptually is that most of the time, the couples that I see have been together for a long time. Some of them 20 and 30 years, you know, of marriage. And they are generally kind of progressive, forward-thinking people. And they want to play out a certain scenario or two. But one of the things that it tends to be is that it's an opportunity for the man in the relationship to sort of see the woman that he's with in a new light. I think that we have to do things so that we don't take the person that we're with for granted. And this is an opportunity for that sort of primal competitive instinct to rear its head, right? It's one
right.
of those things where you don't know what you got till it's gone. That natural human tendency where we don't value something until someone takes it away from us. And this is an opportunity for him to sort of have that passion for his woman reignited in a safe way, having her sort of taken away from and having her enjoy it, and for her to feel
okay.
safe, for her to be able to feel safe and aroused in being able to enjoy it, because you know what? At the end of the day, he gets the girl. At the end of the day, he wins. And so it's a way for all of those sort of natural human instincts for wanting sort of diversity of sexual partners, for wanting there to be a competition, for her getting to feel, oh, here's two men competing over me.
Yes.
You know, and
I can see why all that would completely wake people up.
Exactly. And so that's what it really does, is it reignites them. And so the couples that do this, you know, and we talk about it, the wonderful thing about it is, especially with the ones who, it usually happens very fast, but I have quite a few couples who are sort of regular clients of mine. And what our interactions end up being is a lot of just the three of us hanging out together. And for them to be able to, even if it's just for them to be able to tell the stories kind of their relationship again, and to have
right.
sort of this family friend who has an intimate relationship with them that they feel like they can share anything with. And I usually end up becoming just as good of friends with the guy as I do with the woman, if not more so, you know, and that he just feels like he could talk about anything, you know, and she's there and she's enjoying herself. So it's really kind of this wonderful experience where I get to meet a lot of new friends and interact with people in kind of a very open way and get to play out this sort of awesome fantasy in a safe environment for them, and they're generally really thankful to be able to have the opportunity to do that in a discreet, safe way, you know,
right.
that turns everybody on and within the context of their relationship brings them closer together as people. So it's great. I enjoy it.
And I think that logic comes from who you are, because it was beautiful the way you described it and the gift that you were giving to both of them, where if somebody would have approached it differently, it would have felt completely different to the couple.
Oh, and I've been, I'm not going to say who the individuals are, but, you know, I've been hired a lot, because sometimes the couples want a larger group of situation, you know, a larger
right.
group situation, but I've seen other guys sort of interact and you know, couples who are my regular couples literally be turned off, where the woman's almost in tears just because of the lack of sensitivity. So, and
yep.
this is another escort, you know. So it's not everyone is well equipped to deal in those situations. But, you know, it's the same thing sort of in a different light with some of the female escorts that I know, where some are loved by couples and some have a lot of couples clients, and others both don't like being with couples, and really because of that and because they don't understand what the dynamic is, don't get a lot of couples clients or don't get a lot of repeat clients. So, again, there is an art to it. There's a definite art, and it's something that people who are either too scared to try or can't try because it's you know, a bit out of their financial reach,
right.
or don't want to take the time to, you know, to meet somebody in our position or to interact with us or to talk with us about what it is, they'll never know. You know, and it's just like the sushi. Instead of, you know, for me, it's always been like, just try it. You know, people who are like, and there aren't that many people anymore, but I think that's how most of us were introduced to sushi. That's like, oh, raw fish, I can't do it. Just try it. Oh, it's actually good. And most, there's a reason why I'm paid the amount that I am. I'm not paid the amount that I am because the service that I provide doesn't make people happy. You know,
exactly.
the market just doesn't hold at, you know, $400 or $500 an hour. It doesn't hold for something for an hour that is not fun, for an hour that is not arousing, for an hour that, you know, makes you feel worse at the end of the day. I'd be broke.
Have a high demand just in buying a regular meal, much less something
exactly.
of that dollar value. They definitely want to get what they're searching for, or they
right.
will not
and,
be back.
And the fact of the matter is that most of my time, in terms of hours, is spent with repeat clients. So, you know, that I think that speaks to the fact that not only did they try it once, and it was good, but it was so good that they want it over and over and over and over
right.
again. And by it, I'm saying an experience, and it's a feeling. It's, again, what I think a lot of people don't understand. Sure, can most of us who do this job deliver an orgasm to a woman? Yes, no problem. Right? But that's not what keeps somebody coming back time and time and time
no.
again. It's the idea that here was an experience that was unforgettable. You know, that you look back, and it wasn't the sex, if sex even happened. I mean, I have clients who are my regular clients where there's nothing sexual that happens. You know, it's just pure sort of flirtation and companionship, and it's getting them to that point and getting them ultra aroused, and that's what they're after. And that they can afford to have that experience and to make them feel beautiful and to make them feel desired and to feel wanted, which they are when they're in my presence. So that's what they're after, and that's valuable to people. It's truly valuable. So, you know, it's something that people don't realize when they think about what it is that we do. I think they see the low end of the spectrum, and,
right.
But those people are as far away from who I am as the cook at Denny's is from Gordon Ramsay. You know, the cook at Denny's is doing that because it's a paycheck, and it's a job, and it's how he's able to pay his rent and bills. And he goes into work every day hating it and wishing he could do something different. But you know what? You got to pay the bills. Whereas Gordon Ramsay would do it for free because he loves to cook.
Something tells me you watch the Food Network from time to time.
Well, I do because there is such a connection that I feel with sort of what it takes and the passion that it takes and the sort of level of self-education and the level of dedication that somebody who is a chef puts into food, because it's very much like myself, that I'm creating and providing something for someone else to consume and enjoy. And I get my enjoyment not out of the taste of my food, just like them. They don't get their enjoyment from the taste of their food. They get their enjoyment and satisfaction out of the look on someone else's face when they taste their food. Out of
wow.
the appreciation that the other person has for them because they created something wonderful that this person truly enjoys. And so I feel a deep connection with those people because it's the same thing that I provide.
I can definitely see a correlation. Now, what about fetishes? Is there anything that you're not comfortable with? You seem to be pretty wide open to exploring the world.
Anything, so long as things are sanitary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't want to make myself sick. So
right.
so long as things are sanitary, I'm pretty much open to just about anything.
Yeah, I could see where you would definitely be open to it from what we've seen.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. That just increases your market.
Well, I think if you're not open to, you know, it's again, back to a chef. It's like saying, are there any ingredients that you're not open to using? You know, everybody's palate is going to be different. And if someone says to me, you know what, doing this is what's going to make me happy. Well, I'm in it to make them happy. I'm not in it for, you know, so long as what they're asking me to do is not endangering me. You know, so long as it's not endangering me, why on earth would I not want them to, that's what, my job is to make them happy. My job's not to make me happy. You know, my job is to not stay within my comfort zone. My job requires me to get out of my own comfort zone to make somebody else happy. And I think that that is where sort of the spiritual essence of what it is that I do is, you know, that's, and I enjoy getting out of my comfort zone if it enables me to accomplish what it is that I'm setting out to do, which is to give this person an experience beyond anything that they've ever had.
So, is there, when you first get to meet someone, what is it that you look for that tells you what path to take? Because everybody has an initial reaction to people. What is it that you look for when you first encounter someone?
Well, it's not that I'm actually looking for anything, but I do, you know, I want to know how, what is it that brought us to be sitting in front of each other? You know, everybody has a unique story of how that occurred. And usually within that story, just if it's like, tell me the story of how we got here. it's in the feminine sort of descriptive manner, I will usually find out what her motivation is. You know, she will tell me, you know, I've been thinking for a long time about XYZ, or, you know, I've been divorced for 8 years and I sort of lost my spark or whatever. Or, you know, she says, it's just a fun thing and I just wanted to have fun because things are too serious in my life, or whatever it is. There's going to be some cues, and, you know, we're going to have a conversation and we're going to delve into sort of that motivation for her. But in delving into that, that's also part of the process of seduction and of her being able to, because what you want is, as someone who is practicing the art of love, is that you want to take someone on a bit of an emotional journey. You know, you want them to sort of relive those emotions, walk them all the way through until you get to a point of sort of resolution and climax of the story. So what I'm doing in that case is in my time with them, I'm helping them to walk through their own personal story, that brought them to that point, and to live sort of that emotional journey inside them, the same emotional journey that we take when it's a really great movie that we're watching. You know, it's not the movie per se that makes us say, wow, that was great. It's did it take us on this emotional roller coaster that had us crying and laughing and all of these things, you know. Who cares what the story is? It's what we were feeling inside. So my goal is to sort of take her through that story and for me to be her companion on that journey, that she can share the experience all the way through. And if it's done right, it gets all the way through from, you know, beginning to climax to a nice resolution at the end, and I walk away, and hopefully she wants to have that sort of emotional journey again and again and again, each time a little bit different.
Wow. I love the way you put everything. It makes it feel more pure and open than kind of, you never know what you're going to get when you're with someone, so that you're exactly who I thought you'd be watching you on the show, and I'm happy to see, as I talk deeper with you, that that's who you really are. And
to me, this is pure, right? To me, the only thing that makes it, and again, I think, and one of the reasons why I wrote my book is that I wanted to present sort of a mindset. Because for me, the only thing that I needed to do in order to be who I am is change my mind. As soon as I changed my understanding of reality, or at least my base sort of values about sex and what was and wasn't important, then my actions just follow, right? Action always follows belief. If you believe that eating spinach is going to make you strong like Popeye, you eat spinach. If you believe that eating spinach is going to kill you, you stay away from spinach.
Right.
It's just a belief. So belief and action, action always follows belief. So for me, this I do believe, regardless of what society would say, which is why I never try to justify myself to anybody. I don't have to. You know, because
right.
I just simply, if they say, oh, what you do is wrong, or it's this, or it's that, or how are you able to do that, it's always a funny sort of, I just look at them like, well, first off, you don't do what I do, so you have absolutely no context.
Right.
You're just believing off your own sort of belief with no fact. And me, having been in it, I know that it is pure. You know, I know that I make the decision whether or not this is a sort of morally and ethically good thing to do. I make that decision in how I behave with my clients and whether or not they feel good and satisfied and whether they feel pure at the end of it and whether they feel like they got a good deal and whether this was a wonderful experience that they're happy that they had. So, you know, I want to add to people's lives. For me, this isn't a job. It's not a job. It's my passion, and it's what I was already doing and practicing this sort of
right.
behavior for free before I met Garen, and that was it's kind of how I met him, was that a woman that I was dating, you know, that was pretty much in love with what it was that I was doing with her and how I made her feel. One night I wasn't available. She is a very kind of open person and thought, oh, well, maybe if I call an agency I can get sort of what he's providing. So she called Garen, hired somebody, not going to say who it was. He came over, but needless to say, the next time I saw her, she said, listen, you're so much better than the guy they sent over. You really should be doing this, and I'm going to introduce you to this guy. And that was it.
Wow.
So it was one of those things where I was, this is what I do. It's my philosophy on relationships. It's not a professional philosophy. So if somebody hires me, who they get is exactly who you get if I were to meet somebody at a bar or a party or out on the street. I'm the exact same person. The seduction is seduction is seduction. And, you know, the only thing the money is for is to get me there, because otherwise we wouldn't even meet each other.
Now, have you had strong women in your life that's helped you become more comfortable with women's emotions, or is that just something you're normally comfortable with?
You know, it's interesting that actually unfortunately I've had some pretty dysfunctional women in my life as a whole, and I think that has actually been the reason why I've become good at what I do, is because, you know, I had a desire to figure out, man, why is this so difficult with these women, you know? That's been part of the journey, and I think it's why I'm able to professionally do what I do, because a lot of my clients come to me with some serious hang-ups,
yes.
some big insecurities. They're not always the most sort of stable and happy and emotionally healthy people on the face of the planet. But the fact that I'm able to sort of not be thrown off by that, I'm able to still push through to get sort of at their core being and make them comfortable, is, I think, what time and time again has made me successful at this. You know, a lot of times the reason why women are hiring me and hiring me in particular is because they feel like, you know, they chase men away, they scare men away, because maybe they're not the most emotionally healthy people out there. But they're not going to scare me away, because, like I say, I've had a lot of emotionally unhealthy women in my life.
Wow, so you do have a lot of skills that the average man definitely doesn't. So I could see the value in the amount of money that you're charging, without a doubt. I've trained at it.
So, you know, this is my life. This is my passion and what I do. So I would hope most men have spent absolutely zero time with any of the sort of thoughts and ideas and concepts that I've trained with. So I'd say it's the same thing as, you know, somebody who's trained as a boxer or a martial artist their whole life, who stands up in a fight against some guy who never has even, you know, learned how to throw a punch. I think we know how
right.
that fight is going to end. You know, it's pretty obvious how that fight is going to end. So most men have studied zero of this, where if they studied, you know, 1% of it, it would improve their relationships. If they took the time to read half my book, it would improve, and use some of the stuff and not be scared, it would improve their relationships 100-fold.
Exactly. But I think the core of all of it is seeing value in the person in front of you instead of a conquest. If you
Absolutely.
Can shift that mindset, then the rest of it will fall in place as well.
Well, I look at it like this, you know, every woman that I meet and every sort of interaction that I have teaches me something.
Yeah.
So I definitely go into every interaction with a woman knowing that if I take the time and if I'm patient and I learn about her and I learn what turns her on and I learn what makes her happy, that I've just increased my skills and I've increased sort of my value as a gigolo, my value as a man, my value as a seducer. So I'm going into it wanting to learn from her. You know, as much as she may be
wow.
wanting to learn something from me, I'm going into it wanting to, if I'm going to extract anything from her, it's the knowledge and wisdom that being around her and seducing her has given me. So, like, I very much value all of those interactions.
Wow. And you seem to have such a hunger for learning, and I'm sure it plays in many aspects of your life.
Absolutely. I think that's one thing about me. I love to learn. You know, I have a hunger for knowledge. I want to know how everything works. And it's a blessing and a curse.
And a curse.
It's definitely an aspect of my personality.
Is there before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
No, I mean, stay on the lookout for more seasons of the show because it's been very successful. So,
we'll definitely be watching.
It looks like there are more seasons coming, and I'm working on a second book. This time it's a novel. So when it's near finished, I'll give you a call and we can talk about that. But I think it's
absolutely
just interesting.
And anything else you want to talk about, we're always here to listen. I find you a very
Excellent.
Interesting human being, and I like the way you walk this earth.
Oh,
so.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk more candidly. This has been a great interview, and I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, and good luck in everything that you do.
All right, thank you. Good luck to you too.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Magic inside your fingertips, it's leaking out all over my skin. Yeah, every time that I get close to you, you're making me weak with the way you look through those eyes. But all I see is yours. up with your lips. Come at me from up above.